Hi, I'm Connor, and this is episode 6 of Learn English with Everest, a podcast where I chat to native English speakers in real, unscripted English, and then, step by step, explore the language used. This episode is the second in a 4-part series about English for work and business. CVs, job interviews, phone and email English, chatting to clients, customers, colleagues. We'll be looking at lots of different areas over these 4 episodes, with all the usual vocabulary, grammar, listening practice, and lots more. Oh, and the episodes are now weekly instead of fortnightly, instead of every 2 weeks, so there'll be even more for you to enjoy. So last week I talked to Rob about making the perfect CV, and this week I talked to Sarah about the next step, the job interview. So doing a job interview in your own language can be pretty difficult and nerve-wracking, but doing it in a foreign language can make you even more nervous, I suppose. So Sarah and I have 7 tips to make sure you're prepared and ready for any interview. So let's get to the discussion. Along the way, I'll explain lots of the vocabulary, idioms, phrasal verbs, and other expressions that we use. And in terms of grammar, we will be focusing on the modal verb, should, in particular. And don't forget that all of the material, including today's 7 tips, is on the website everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So that's everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So we started with number 1, do your homework. Do some research.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
So, I think the very first thing, one of the most important things you can do is to do your homework, as we say. So, to know the company, to know the job, to know the person as well that's going to interview you. So, would you agree this is a pretty solid rule?
Yeah, absolutely. It's important to know, what is the position you're interviewing for? What does it require? What will you be likely to do? And just know the background to it. I also think you should think about what role you'll have and where does that fit in the bigger, wider company. So you can ask about that and you can talk about that in the interview. So doing your homework is absolutely the first thing you should do.
Yeah, so you'll kind of sound a lot more knowledgeable if you ask very specific questions, especially in a big company that, you know, you kind of might have quite a specific role. And if you know what that role is, then it shows that you are willing to find out things about the company and you're being proactive and so on. So the other thing I think as well about doing your homework is just sort of knowing how to present yourself at an interview. Most companies will have maybe a formal, maybe an informal dress code, but there'll be some sort of dress code. So what would you advise wearing to an interview or presenting yourself at an interview?
This is a difficult one because more and more companies are being very informal. You think of Google or big American companies, they often wear casual clothes, but that's when you go to work. For an interview, I think you have to really think about presenting yourself well. So people sometimes say you should dress one level up, and I think that's good to remember. So that really means, you know, don't come to an interview for a bank wearing jeans and a t-shirt, but equally, you don't have to go to a restaurant job in a full suit. So there's no exact rule, but definitely think about what is appropriate and dress to that. So you're giving a good impression when you first meet your new employer.
Okay, perfect. So if you've done your homework, you know what the company does, you know what you are going to be doing, and you know how to look and dress appropriately for the interview.
So we talked about the dress code, the appropriate clothes to wear in a particular situation. So this is the dress code. It might be formal or casual or smart casual, so that sort of thing. And we then moved on to number 2. Really know your CV.
So when you do get in, I think it's probably a good idea not to assume that the interviewer already has your CV with them or has it to hand, or even that they've read it that recently. They might have read 100 CVs last month and then they're setting up some interviews. So I think it's a good idea to bring a copy of your CV and also to really know your CV, know every detail.
I agree, and I think you should look for parts of your CV that you can talk about. Really, like you said, to refresh their memory. So if there's something on your CV that you think is really good and useful in the job that you would have done before, then you should bring this up. You should be ready to talk about this and refer back to, it's in my CV, therefore it'll remind them of the work that you have done before.
Yeah, so if you really know yourself, you know your work experience, you know your CV, it doesn't really give the interviewer much confidence if they ask you about a particular job and you go, I don't really remember doing that or whatever. So, know everything on your CV and use it to talk about your best points.
So you heard the expression to refresh someone's memory. So this is to remind them of something they maybe already know, but they might have forgotten. So this is to refresh someone's memory. And you've also heard us both use the modal verb should several times by now. And I'm going to talk about should in a little bit, but first, see if you can hear how we use it in the next section and listen to tip number three.
Number three is to practice. Do lots and lots of practice. What do you think you should do in order to practice for a job interview?
First off, you can just Google common interview questions and practice answering them. You can ask maybe your friends or people you live with, be an interviewer and ask you those questions. Why should we hire you? What brings you to the job? There are lots of things interviewers often ask. So have an answer practiced and ready for that in advance will really help you. Another thing is to make sure you are selling yourself as best you can. That means explaining and showing to the interviewer why you are a good candidate, why you would be a good fit for this job, and why they really should hire you for it. Reminding them of that, selling yourself and talking about what you bring to the job. Preparing that in advance is a really, really good way to get ready for an interview.
Yeah, and I think then more specifically to doing an interview in another language, you obviously need to be able to conduct an interview in English, but you need the specific vocabulary. I mean, you have to know the key vocabulary for the job you're looking for. If you're trying to get a job in a specific industry and you don't know the English terms in that industry, then that's definitely not going to work. So you should practice that as well, or alongside practicing more general sort of interview questions too.
So in this section, you heard the phrase to sell yourself. So this is what you're doing in a job interview. You can sell something, you know, a bookshop sells books, but you can also use the verb reflexively to sell yourself. Last week, we had the phrasal verb to talk yourself up, so to make yourself sound good. And so these two are related. Now, you also heard us use the word should again in this section, and I wanted to talk a little bit about this modal verb. So we use should in quite a few different ways, but there are three sort of main ways that we use it. The first one of the most common ways we use it, is for advice, and we can use it in a positive or negative way, should or shouldn't. So you should dress appropriately for a job interview. This is a good idea. You shouldn't arrive late for the interview, this sort of thing. So students don't usually have any major problems with this usage of the word should, so should for advice. The second use is for a mild obligation, so the opposite of a strong obligation, for which we use must or have to. So in the last section, I said you have to know the vocabulary for the job you're looking for. So it's not that this is just a good idea, it's essential. If you go to a job interview in a shop and the interviewer says, oh, you'll be working on the till, and you don't know what a till is, then, you know, you may not get the job. A till, by the way, is the machine with the drawer where you keep the money in a shop. This is the till. So this is essential, and for these sort of things, we use a modal verb of strong obligation, have to or must. But when we want something a little bit milder and not so strong, we use should. So you should bring a copy of your CV to the interview. It's not essential, but, you know, it's a very sensible idea. Another example might be, you know, in Ireland, you have to wear a seatbelt while driving a car. You know, you have to wear a seatbelt. This is the law. You can't choose not to. But maybe you should drive more slowly if the roads are wet. You know, there's no exact law about the speed you should go if the roads are wet, but it's just very sensible. It's a good idea. So have to and should. One thing to be aware of as well is that we often use should instead of must or have to in formal situations to be more polite, especially in sort of written signs or notices. So you might see a sign saying, "All visitors should go to reception." You know, this isn't really an option. It's not really mild obligation. You have to go to reception. This is sort of a strong obligation. But in this situation, we use should instead of must or have to, just because it sounds more polite, it sounds nicer. So sometimes should is used for stronger obligations, but only really in very formal situations, and especially in written signs and written notices. Now, the third way that we use should is one that tends to confuse students the most. This is when should is used for something which is logical to expect. So to talk about something that normally happens, something that should happen, but maybe this time it hasn't happened. So, for example, say your friend calls you and they say, "Hey, I'm near your house. I'll see you in 5 minutes." Then 15 minutes later, she's still not at your house. So you're a little bit confused. You might say, "Oh, I wonder where she is. She should be here by now." So it's logical to expect her to be here. She should be here, but she's not. Or another example, you always leave your car keys on a hook beside your door. And then one morning they're not there. And you say, "Oh, where are my car keys? They should be here. You know, they're always here. I expect them to be here." So it's not the same as may or might or could, which we use for possibility or uncertainty. So in the same example, if you then ask your friend to help you to look for your car keys, your friend might make some suggestions. They might say, "Oh, your keys may or might or could be in your coat pocket. You know, they might be there. It's a possibility. Or they may or might or could be in the kitchen." So these are suggestions or ideas. They're possibilities, but it's not the same as, "Where are my keys? They should be here. You know, they're always here. I expect them to be here." So this is a slightly trickier usage of should, and it's something that you need to pay a little bit of attention to. So there are some other less common ways that we use should, but for now I'm just going to focus on those three. You also, of course, have should in the past, which is should have, but for now, let's get back to Sarah, and let's get to number four. Get to the point. So number four is to get to the point. So what you definitely shouldn't do is to give really long-winded, rambling answers where you go on and on and on. So you've only got a limited amount of time to sell yourself, and you've only got a limited amount of time to convince the employer that you're the person for the job. So yeah, what do you think about that?
I totally agree. You really have to make those first few minutes count, because you have to remember they're interviewing a lot of people, so they will make up their mind about you very quickly, sometimes in the first few minutes. So yeah, make those first few minutes count. Don't keep talking on and on. And I do this sometimes if I'm nervous. I talk a little fast, and I just, like I'm doing now, I just talk a lot and a lot. So keep to the point and really make sure that you have made a good impression early on. That should be important.
Yeah, it's all about making an impression. So the first couple of minutes are definitely the most important. So get to the point and make an impression.
So we had two words there for a long, boring answer. To be long-winded. So a long-winded person is someone who talks and talks and talks. You know, they use a lot of wind, a lot of breath, and they don't get to the point. They ramble. So to ramble is to talk and talk and talk, and again, not be direct. We also use the very common expression to make up your mind. So we use this a lot, maybe more than the more straightforward verb to decide. I can't make up my mind whether I should do X or Y, for example.
So number five is to be positive. I think this is pretty self-explanatory. Nobody wants to hear a list of complaints about how terrible your last job was or why everything in this industry is really, really bad. So yeah, don't be a whiner.
And don't complain, or don't be maybe too quick to point out negative things. So for example, if they said, "Sometimes the restaurant, we finished late, you might need to stay a little later," don't complain about that. If you don't want to work late, then that's okay. You don't have to take the job. But in an interview, it's about being positive, and then you can make a decision afterwards. So don't complain.
So no complaining. Number six is you will mostly be answering things, but you should also prepare a few questions. So it would be pretty unusual, really, to have an interview where the interviewer doesn't ask you, maybe at the end, you know, do you have any questions that you want to know about us? So you should have something prepared for this. What kind of things do you think you should prepare? Or?
Well, it also might be a good idea if we think back to our earlier tip, number three, about practicing. If you can think about a question to ask that maybe you can bring in some of the vocabulary you have learned about that industry. That is a good way to show you understand the job, you're able for the job. And it shows, like you said, that you're interested in this. This is something that you have thought about and want to get more information on from them. You should at least have thought about that and maybe some ideas of what to ask if the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, I mean, if you have no questions, you might seem a little bit bored or unprepared or uninterested. And if you ask the wrong questions, it can give a really bad impression.
Like how much does this pay? You should never ask that.
And when do I get paid? And,
how much do I get paid?
yeah. So these sort of things, maybe you can leave that for another time. So some carefully chosen questions which illustrate how amazing you are for the job.
So in the first part you just heard, we had the verb to whine. W-H-I-N-E. So this is a more informal verb, meaning to complain. So I use the noun from this, a whiner, someone who complains all the time. So we actually have loads of words in English for complaining, to whine, to whinge, to grumble, to moan, to groan. And actually we often use the last two together, someone who's moaning and groaning. You know, they're always complaining about things. And you can make some of these into nouns, you know, someone can be a whinger, a whiner, a moaner. But, you know, you gotta sometimes be careful how you use these because they might be a little bit insulting. But they're all kind of more informal words. The verb to complain is a little bit more, not formal, but more sort of neutral. So, moving on to the final tip, number seven. In this section, Sarah and I are going to use the phrasal verb to jot down. So this is a slightly more informal way of saying to write or to write down something. Particularly when you're talking about notes or something a little bit more casual. So you might jot down a phone number on a piece of paper or jot down some notes very quickly before a meeting or, you know, that kind of thing. This is to jot down. So number seven.
So number seven is to follow up. This is something you should do after the interview. So what sort of things should you do to follow up afterwards?
Well, a really easy thing to do is just send a quick email. You can email them to thank the interviewer for taking the time to talk to you. Also, this is a good way to remind them who you are. You will be maybe one of several candidates. So a short email puts your name back in their mind and it reminds them, and this is a nice gesture to do. Another thing that can be very helpful is right after the interview, just jot down some of the things that maybe came up. This might be questions they asked that you weren't so sure about. It could also be things that you feel I can email with some follow-on information. So just take a minute to write a little note of some of the things that you could follow up with an email. This is good for that job interview as the follow-up we've just talked about, but it's also helpful for other interviews you might be going for. So if you have an experience where you weren't really sure what you could say to that question, think about it afterwards, and then for the next interview, you can maybe be prepared for that similar question.
Yeah, or even for the next interview for the same job, if you have a follow-up interview. You know, a lot of jobs now have second, third, fourth, fifth round interviews. So if you remember to jot down all the little things that happened in that interview, then when you get to the next round, you'll be even more prepared. So that's it. There are seven hopefully useful tips for getting a great job. So thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Connor.
So there you go. You'll be fully prepared for your next job interview, I hope. So this week we had lots of vocabulary and idioms and phrasal verbs. We had business vocabulary, like to jot something down, to sell yourself, a dress code, and lots of other useful words like long-winded, to whine, to refresh someone's memory. And we had lots of uses of should. So if you want to get lots more of these details, you should visit the website, everestlanguageschool.com/podcast, where you can have a look at all of the vocabulary and all of the tips we were talking about today. And that's it. So thank you very much for listening. I'll be back in another week with another episode of Learn English with Everest, part 3 in this Business English mini-series. Special thanks to my guest Sarah, and thanks also to Nuvo Noise, who provided the theme music for the show. And of course, if you like the show, tell all your friends. Everest is on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, so get in touch, let us know if you're enjoying the show. Thanks very much, and see you next week for episode 7.